Without further ado, we're very privileged to have with us Ms. April Kane, CPA. She's with Merkey & Associates, a local accounting firm. And I'll get you your handout. Yes, ma'am. All right. And I will go ahead and hand it over to April, who will give you the real information, right? All right.
Good afternoon. How are y'all today?
Good.
And so excited to learn about income tax. Yay. Yes. And Jimmy and I were just talking about how it's important from my perspective to do this type of presentation now versus in March, because I get a little busy that time of year and I'm not quite as, I'm sleep deprived and the bags get a bit bigger, so I don't know how entertaining it would be at that point. Just to give you a little bit of background on me, I am a graduate from North Texas. I finished their five-year accounting program and following graduation worked for Deloitte & Touche, both in Dallas and in London. I've specialized with individual tax while I was with them, and joined Merkey & Associates about 2 years ago. We're a local CPA firm located over by Denton High School, specialized in small businesses, working with individuals, teaching people how to retire and retire rich, and keep the IRS off their doorstep, things along those lines. So today we're going to go through and talk a little bit about the federal income tax system. We'll talk about the different taxes that are out there, why you're taxed, what your responsibilities are, and then also what your privileges are from taxation. And then we'll also talk a little bit about the actual filing of your income tax returns and what you can expect and what you need to be doing both as a student and then once you're graduated and out in the real world, how the additional taxes at that point, what you need to be looking for. Does everyone have a slideshow handout now? Okay. You know, I found this statistic and I found this alarming. In the last 10 years, it is the individuals in your age group that have had a 96% increase in bankruptcy filings. 96% of the 18 to 24-year-olds. I mean, that's a lot. That's a huge increase for bankruptcy filings. The predominant reason for that is looking at credit card debt, which is something, you know, all the credit card companies certainly come to you now. The reason that that's important in understanding your taxes is because everything in regards to your financial circumstances impacts every aspect of your life. It impacts where you can live. It impacts what jobs you'll get from where you live. It impacts what type of house you'll have and what type of opportunities that you can have. So understanding your financial system, both from an investment perspective and then also the tax implications, how much it's going to cost you to work, is equally important. Can everyone hear me in the back all right? Okay. The United States has the right to tax every single one of us based on the U.S. Constitution. The 16th Amendment says that Congress can levy a tax. Taxes started off when the American Revolution happened. We incurred all this debt in order to gain our independence, and it had to be paid for. The way that they paid for it was by levying taxes to try and reduce our debt. What we get from that, so when you pay your taxes, there are all these different public goods and services that are provided to you. Part of this university is paid for by taxes that are paid. The roads outside, our military, social welfare systems, Medicare, Medicaid. So there's a lot of different things that you will receive the benefits of from paying your income taxes, your payroll taxes, and different types that you might be subject to. So you've got your federal income tax. So that's the IRS form that you file at the end of the year. You live in Texas, so you get a benefit in that you don't have a state income tax. Texas is one of 8 states in the United States that doesn't subject its residents to an income tax system. The taxes, state income tax rates in other states range anywhere from 1.5% up to 10%. California has some of the highest income tax rates to look at. I'm not going to talk a lot about the state income taxes simply because it doesn't apply to any of us today. But I would encourage you that after graduation, if you're looking to move to another state, that when you're thinking about how much money you're going to have with that new job that you've got, to really take into consideration if you're going to be subject to another state income tax. Because, I mean, 5%, if you get a job and you make $100,000 a year, and the state is going to subject you to a 5% income tax, that's $5,000 a year that you have to pay for living in, let's say, Missouri, that you don't have to pay living in Texas. So thinking about the additional costs that come into play is important. That's not to say that Texas doesn't have its taxes, because we still have the governor, we've got the capital, we still have the same types of state programs that have to be paid for. It's just Texas has different taxes that are higher than some of the other states. Texas has some of the highest property taxes in the nation. If you buy a house in the state of Texas or in Denton County, you're going to pay about 2.5% every single year on your property taxes on the value of the house. Sales tax in Texas is also a lot higher. There are more things that are subject to sales tax than in some other states. So there's a lot of different factors that come into play. The transaction taxes, that's generally going to be your sales tax. So we pay that whenever we go to Gap or Banana Republic or Starbucks. I do a lot of shopping. I spend a good bit of money there. And then the property taxes with the real estate. Any questions so far? My students, I teach at North Texas and teach a couple of different tax classes, and they sometimes tell me that I get so excited that I start talking too quickly. So if I do that, please don't hesitate to ask a question or just ask me to slow down, and I'm happy to do that. So where does all this money come from? You know that you've got these taxes to pay. You have all these different items of where the government gets its money in order to fund all of these different programs that it does. And you can see that there's a big point. All of that green bit is the personal income taxes that you're going to pay based on how much income you make. That's all your income tax. The yellow part is going to be the other portion that you see come out of your paychecks. There's three different taxes that will come out of a paycheck when you're getting paid. And it's the yellow and the green bits that are paying for those. And then this is where it goes. You can see that the majority of the money is going to go to pay for Social Security, which we hear a lot of conversations about. It gets thrown into the media quite frequently about funding Social Security and the Medicare and Medicaid programs. So what is your role as a taxpayer? You are a United States citizen or you're a United States resident. So you have a role as a taxpayer in this country. Doesn't matter if you're a citizen or a green card holder. It doesn't matter where you're working, where you're living, where you're getting paid from. You have an obligation to file a U.S. tax return. I lived in London for 2 years. In 2005 and 2006? And even though I was no longer living in the United States, I still had an obligation to file my U.S. tax return and pay, potentially, taxes in the United States if I'd had any tax due. So as a U.S. taxpayer, you have an obligation to file what's called a voluntary tax return. The 1040 or 1040EZ that you file, it's your obligation to file, but it is a voluntary system. It's not something the government doesn't calculate your tax for you and then send you a bill. You have to calculate it and prepare it and send your taxes to them with the return. So what do you need to do? As a U.S. citizen or as a taxpayer, you need to file your tax return. You need to keep the records to support your tax return. We'll talk a little bit about what types of records you want to keep. You need to calculate your tax liability, and you need to file your tax return on time. And it's in your best interest to file it on time to avoid any late payment penalties or interest that might be assessed. Tax avoidance versus tax evasion. Evasion is legal. Al Capone was thrown in jail for tax evasion. Avoidance is minimizing your tax liability as much as possible within the confines of the tax law. So as little as you can possibly pay is completely fine by the IRS as long as you've done it in a legal manner. And the taxpayer rights, the IRS had a bad rep in probably the 80s that they've worked hard over the last 20 years to try and overcome about being very harsh and aggressive in pursuing taxpayers. So as a taxpayer, there's taxpayer advocacy centers with the IRS, and you have all of these rights as a taxpayer. One of them is to know that you have all of your information is private with the Privacy Protection Act, certainly. The next thing to know is that you have the right to appeal any IRS decision that you don't agree with. You have filed your tax return, if the IRS comes to you and says that you've done it wrong and you disagree with them, you have the ability to actually go back to work through the court system to have it appealed. All right, so our paycheck. this is what I was talking about, all the taxes that you see come out. You can see over on the right-hand side all the bits that are highlighted. It starts off with the FICA tax and the Medicare tax, which are going to be your Social Security taxes that you'll always pay, see coming out of a paycheck. And then you have the federal tax, which you hope to see, otherwise you're going to owe when you file your tax return. And then the bottom two bits are for New York State and New York City, if you were living there. So payroll taxes and income taxes. Payroll taxes are made up of those two bits that were listed, the first two on the paycheck, Medicare and FICA. Your Medicare tax is 1.45% of every single dollar you make. If you make $10 and you get a paycheck for $10 from McDonald's, you have to pay 1.45% for Medicare tax. If you make $1 million as the CEO of Dr. Pepper, then you're going to pay 1.45 of the $1 million as your Medicare tax. The 6.2% is the Social Security tax. That number, actually, the maximum amount or what your earnings that are taxed at that rate, it changes every year. It's adjusted for inflation, but it's around the first $90,000. So the first $90,000 you make, you're going to have 6.2% to go to Social Security. Everything over that, you're only going to have that 1.45. So, I mean, that right there, I mean, that's already 7.5%. So if you've made $100,000, we're already short $7,650 just from our payroll taxes. We haven't even gotten to income taxes yet. Yes, ma'am.
Is there any way you can see the taxes that you paid?
Mm-hmm. The Social Security Administration will start sending out, like I get mine every year, it's a brochure that comes from them that says, based on your earnings, this is your earnings over the last 10 to 20 years. Here's how much you earned. Here's how much you paid in payroll and Social Security taxes. And then it'll also say, based on this and based on these earnings, here's what you can expect to receive as a Social Security payment at age 72. Because that's when the methodology for getting your Social Security payments in retirement is based off of how much you pay in as an employee. So over your working life, if you make more, that means you're going to get more from Social Security because you would have paid in more taxes. And so you'll start getting those forms. I think you can actually request them off of the Social Security website, but I know that they start coming. Well, I started getting mine after college when I actually was making some money, a bit more. Any questions on the payroll taxes? The next thing to know is that the W-4, every single employer that you go to work for should request that you complete a W-4. The W-4 determines the other tax that is all should always be coming out of your paycheck, and that's going to be your federal income tax. The W-4 is a whole, it's an 8.5 by 11 page, but it's just the bottom third of the page that your employer wants. It asks you your basic information, name, address, Social Security number. Important to make sure that's right, because that's where they're going to send your W-2 at the end of the year. But it's line 5 that's especially important. The number that you put in that box determines how much income tax will be withheld from your paycheck. The higher you make the number, the less that they're going to withhold. And the lower you make the number, the higher the number, the less they withhold. The lower the number, the more they withhold. And I've written that down. It's on your slides as well. What happens is if you get to the end of the year, and let's say that you don't want them to withhold any tax, so you put a 99 on line 5, so they don't take any income tax out of your paycheck. So you get all of it. So you feel rich. Yay! But you get to the end of the year and you file your tax return, and you owe $4,000 because you didn't have any income tax withheld. The benefit of having a lower number on there is that the income tax will be calculated based on that, so that every time you're paid, they will say, oh, look at this, she put a 1 on the form, so based on her income with a 1, and she's single or married, that means that she should have $200 of withholding come out. And generally, that should work out towards the end of the year to be pretty close, so that you get a refund back, or so you certainly don't have a large payment with your tax return. Why do you get a refund? We'll get to that. I'll make it there. Yes, ma'am.
Probably wiser to make out or have more.
Yeah. From my perspective, there's also penalties if you don't have enough withheld. If you're someone that's very, very diligent about saving your money, which most of us aren't, honestly. Most of us, if we've got it in the bank, then it's gone. It's to rent, it's to insurance, it's to a night out, it's to new clothes. For me, it's to Starbucks. So if I never have the money, if it never hits my checking account, then I can't spend it. Because I ran my own tax estimate for 2009 a couple of weeks ago and realized that I was going to be multiple thousand dollars short. And I almost fainted because coming up with that money on April 15th would be difficult. I'd imagine that it's just as difficult for me as it is for you. Someone tells you that you owe $2,000 when you're not expecting it to. It's not like you have that sitting around, right? So having a lower number on there, while you might not get as much over the course of the year, guarantees that you won't have a payment due, or helps to guarantee that you won't have a payment due at the end of the year. And at the same time, if you get a refund back, a lot of people use it as a savings account. They file their tax return, they've paid too much in tax, so they get a $1,000 check back, which is better than having to pay $1,000 in. And you know, as you age and as you become, your job becomes more and more professional and you're earning more and more, you can work with an accountant or with your HR, or you might go through the process of determining exactly how much you need to have withheld. But when you're just getting started, I would certainly say it's better to have more than less to avoid having to pay in. Any other questions on this one? So all of your wages, your tips, if you're in restaurants or if you get from any type of service where you're receiving tips. The United States, the IRS, it's not a surprise that their definition of what is taxable income, or what's income, is every single cent that you make, unless they specifically say that they're not going to tax it. So I tell my students that if you find a $100 bill on the ground and pick it up, by the IRS's standards, that $100 should be reported on your tax return. Obviously, it's up to each person whether you do that to that extent. But everything you earn, so all of your tip income, all of your wage income, all of that should be reported on your tax return. And I'll tell you how I would imagine that there are a number of people that might be earning tips. And you know, at lower income levels, it's not as big of a deal. If you're at a point where you're making a substantial amount of money in tips, the way that they catch that, the IRS will look to see if you're reporting everything, is one, they'll look at what other people at restaurants of your same size or approximate size, how much they're reporting in tips. And if you're reporting $500 a year, and someone from the same restaurant or from a similar restaurant is reporting $4,000 a year, then they'd want to know where the disparity was. Similarly, if you are living a lifestyle or putting money into your bank account of $2,000 every month, but then your wages are only $200 and you're only reporting tips of $200, where's the other $1,600 coming from? And that's what the IRS looks at in an audit, of trying to see, well, if you're putting $2,000 a month into your account, where's everything else coming from if we haven't seen it somewhere else? Yeah, you would be able to. You'd be able to go back and say this is this or this is that, but it's more of a mindset of how they actually go through the audit. Everything that you have, so all of your hourly wages, if you're on salary, everything gets put on your paycheck, and at the end of the year, you get a form W-2 from your employer. And your W-2 is going to say, in box one, up at the very top, I don't know where my dot is now. Box one would have the total wages in there. So that's the total amount that you earn from that job during the year. If you had five jobs, then you're going to have five W-2s. Box 1 is going to show your total wages. Box 2 is going to show your total income tax withholding. So that's going to have the number that you put on the W-4, that number determines how much is going to be withheld and be reported in box 2. The two boxes underneath that, boxes 4 and 6, are going to show the Social Security and the Medicare tax. So you know at the end of the year exactly how much you've had withheld from your paychecks when it comes to taxes. This form gets attached to your tax return when you file your tax return. Any questions so far? Yes, sir.
So say, for example, like I work in the summer, I'm not working right now, I'm managing it, or if you are still kind of working.
Yeah, at the end of the year, your employer will give this to you. Unless you've told them otherwise, they'll probably mail it to the address that you put on your W-4. Your employers are required by the IRS to issue you with a W-2 by January 31st, following the close of the year. So once you've received it, then you can go through preparing your individual tax return. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Do you have to do that?
Do you have to do a W-2?
Yeah.
Yes. For an employer, if an employer doesn't provide one to you, then they're penalized on their side. By like the day, as soon as it gets to February 1st and they haven't issued it, then they get penalized.
What happens if you don't?
If the employer doesn't?
No, if I don't. Like if I don't.
Then the IRS would come to you. Well, if you're due a refund, then they generally won't chase you down. But if you should have had, if you should have paid more tax, then you'll receive a notice from the IRS asking for your tax return. Yes, ma'am.
How would they know if the employer says they gave it to you and you
said
they didn't?
You can just issue it. Because the IRS has to, when an employer prepares the W-2s, they come in about 5 different copies, A, B, C, D, and E, and they send one copy to you, and at the same time they have to issue another copy to the IRS. So the IRS has a record because the employer has sent in one of these to the IRS and they've sent one to you. So the IRS can look on your account, they can pull up your Social Security number and say, oh, I can see that she made $20,000 in 2009, but she didn't have any withholding, and she hasn't filed a tax return. So then you'll get a notice from the IRS saying, hey, we need your tax return. And if you don't respond, then you'll get another notice that says, we've calculated your tax for you. You owe us $4,000 plus $600 in penalties plus $1,200 in late payment interest. So it's in your best interest to do the voluntary filing to make sure that your W-4 is withholding taxes you're going through the year. And then when you file your tax return, to do it on a timely basis to avoid any of those interest and penalties. Yes, ma'am. We'll get to that too. Good question. I'm glad I've addressed all of those in here. Yes, ma'am. Right, yeah. You're supposed to get taxed on all of it, yeah. Any of the tips, every tip that you receive, whether it's cash or check or credit card, it's all taxable.
Maybe
you
should get taxed though.
No, it's not uncommon. It's illegal, and you can go to jail for it. But it's not uncommon when cash within tips with waitresses and hair salons, baggage handlers, any type of the personal services where you receive tips. It's not an uncommon practice, but it is illegal. So it is against the law to do it. If you do that and your return was audited, the IRS would most likely assess you amounts, assess you additional taxes, and the penalties and the interest for non-payment. Not a good answer for you, but no. Yes, ma'am.
I have a patient every week and pays me out of pocket to take care of him, but is that taxable? Because he doesn't. What am I supposed to do about that?
Well, at the end of the year, if you've got someone where you're being paid contract as a contractor, the individual is obligated.
It's not a contract.
No, if you're not an employee, then you're a contractor and getting paid for it. The individual that's paying you is required to provide you with a form at the end of the year, a different form that says, here's how much I've paid you, so that you can use that in preparing your tax return, which is good for him because he can probably take a deduction for it on his return. Any other questions? The big thing to know is any income you receive, regardless of the source, regardless of how it's paid to you, if it comes on a paycheck, if it's cash, if you win the lottery, scholarships under some circumstances, it's all income, unless the IRS specifically says that they're not going to tax you on it. And though they're very stringent and very few things that they say they're going to give you a freebie on. So the basic tax formula, we've got all this income, the IRS is going to take everything, and everything gets lumped in at the top. From that, you've got a few special adjustments that they let you make, some self-employed, there's some IRA contribution deductions you can take, some educator expenses that you can take. Jimmy's wife, you take that, don't you? You do that with your wife? Oh, yeah. You get to adjusted gross income. The AGI is a number, it's an acronym you hear a lot. A lot of other calculations are based off of your AGI. From that, we get to take out these deductions for either your standard or your itemized deduction, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. You get to take the greater of the two. You also get to subtract a personal exemption for every single dependent on your return. So if your parents are claiming you, then you don't get to take that bit because they're getting that deduction on their side. But if you're married, if you've got kids, then for each person listed on your return, then you get to take a personal exemption for it. The personal exemption right now is around $3,700. It changes every year. It gets adjusted for inflation. So then we get down to our taxable income. And from that, you have to apply whatever the appropriate tax bracket is. And I'll put up some tax brackets in just a second. So you apply the tax rate, and you get your tax liability. And then from that, you get to take out a few, so you get to subtract some credits, important credits that you'll probably, that you're probably familiar with. The HOPE education credit, the lifetime learning credit, that comes out at this point. You also, if you have children, you've also got the dependent care credit, the child tax credit that can come out here among some of the other ones. Those are probably the most common, I would imagine the most common among in this age group. Other taxes, if you're subject to any penalties, if you pull out money from your IRA before you're supposed to, before 59 and a half, if you're a self-employed individual, you have additional self-employment taxes that get added in. So then we get to this lovely total taxes. We made all this money. We got to subtract a few things. We got to taxable income. We applied our tax rates. And now we're down to the total taxes that we have to pay. And you were asking earlier, how do you know if you have a refund? So if, let's say that we get down to total taxes, and we've determined that our total taxes are $5,000 for the year. Well, you get to subtract from that your withholding. So we're going back to that box 2 on the W-2 where we told our employer how much to withhold out of every paycheck. Well, if that box 2, let's say that it says that we had $6,000 withheld. So if our total taxes are $5,000, but we had $6,000 withheld, then we get a $1,000 refund. Flip side of that, if our taxes are $5,000 and we only had $4,000 withheld, then you've got a $1,000 payment to make. So it's that very bottom line that's going to tell you whether there's a refund or a liability that you have to pay with your tax return. It's always nice to get the refund and have a little pad the pocket just a bit. Does that make sense? Any questions? It's a real basic tax formula. This is the individual income tax return. You've got the 1040, and then you also have the 1040EZ, which is just the simple version or a simpler version of this. Certainly by the time that you've graduated, once you've bought a house, if you've got kids, you're going to end up on this form. The other form is a one-page version of this. It's just pulled out those items that are less common so that everything's just condensed down into one page. But this has all of the items that we were talking about before. This is all of your income items. So you've got your wages, interest, dividends, if you've got rental property, if you get Social Security payments. Then you have the adjustments. So there are some in here, the traditional IRA contributions, if you've got self-employment, health insurance, to get down to the adjusted gross income, which was that magic number. The top of the next page, we've got our itemized and standard deductions, the exemptions, which is that one around $3,700 per year per person, to get down to our total tax. Here, all of those withholdings, the box two, from your W-2, is subtracted from that to figure out whether you get a refund or whether you have a balance due. So these are the tax rates for a single individual for 2009. So if you make $100,000 in 2009, you're going to be at a 25% tax bracket. So this is, I mean, this is something that you really need to understand. If you're going to be subject to 25 cents on the dollar for every dollar you make over $100,000. Which means that if you make $100,001, that $1, 25 cents of it for federal income tax, but then you've also got that other 7 cents that goes to payroll taxes. So you're down to 68 cents on the dollar at that $100,001 point. So I mean, you're talking about a lot of money and how based on how much you get to take home. The way that the tax bracket works is the first $16,700 that you make is taxed at 10%. So this is looking at your taxable income. So this is after your personal exemption and your standard and itemized deduction. So this is after we've taken the deductions out of there. Between $16,000 and $67,000, that bracket is taxed at 15%. The United States, the tax brackets are progressive, which means that you have this much that's taxed at 10%, and then the next bit's taxed at 15, and then the next bit's taxed at 25, and so on and so forth. So you can see that the rates get bigger, but you get the benefit for that first $16,000 at the really low tax rates. If you're married filing joint, the figures for the first three line items are just doubled if you're married based on from a single person. We talked about how everything's considered taxable income unless the IRS says it's not. The few things that are considered non-taxable, if you receive a gift, that's non-taxable to you. There are some circumstances where the person that gives you the gift might be subject to a tax for giving it to you, but as the recipient, if your granddad comes up and says he wants to give you $100,000, you personally won't have to pay any tax on that. So that's free money to you. Because it's for a service, and you've earned it. That's just, the IRS considers the tip, because the tip is based off of the service that was provided and based on who provided the service. So it's essentially additional compensation to you, is how the IRS looks at it. Yes, ma'am. Inheritances to the recipient are completely tax-free. I mean, if you receive $1 million and put $1 million in the bank, and then $1 million earns $100,000, and that $100,000 is taxable, but $1 million when you've received it is completely tax-free. Whoever gives it to you may be subject to a tax when they give it to you. So there's a tax on, when you're looking at gifts, there's a tax from where it's coming from, gifts and estates. There's a tax on that side of it potentially, but not to the actual recipient. Any other questions? All right, how do we decrease our tax liability? How do we get it smaller? The standard deduction or itemized deduction, I sort of mentioned that earlier, so that we've got our adjusted gross income, and we subtract from that either standard or itemized, the greater of the two. For 2009, every single one of you gets a standard deduction of $5,700. If you're married, the figures are different, but for a single person, they will let you take $5,700 off the top. Itemized deductions, I would imagine that most people in here probably aren't going to itemize. In the state of Texas, the reasons you get to itemize deductions are when the IRS has put tax laws out there to try and get you to spend money in certain ways. For example, you get to take a deduction for any mortgage interest you pay. The IRS or the government wants people to buy a house. They want Americans to buy a house because it's good for the economy. You buy a house, you have to pay mortgage interest on it, so they give you a tax break on the mortgage interest. You get deductions for all of your itemized deductions, mortgage interest, property taxes, charitable contributions, so if you give money to your church, all of those get added up, and if your itemized deductions are greater than your standard deduction, then they let you take the bigger number. Most of you, I would imagine, are probably going to be on a standard deduction. I'm generally still on a standard deduction at this point, unless you really have some significant charitable contributions. So then you can see that the personal exemption for 2009 is $3,650. which means before you ever have any taxable income, you get to take a deduction for $5,700 plus $3,650, which gives you $9,350 that you can earn before you have to pay a single cent in income taxes. You still have to pay your payroll taxes on it, so that 1.45 and the 6.2 for Medicare and Social Security, you still have to pay that, but you can earn $9,350 before you have to pay any income tax. So that's the threshold in your mind of really when you start having a filing requirement. You should file returns before that, but the IRS will start looking for you to file a return if you're earning over that $9,350 mark. That being said, let's say that you get your W-2 at the end of the year, and it shows that you only earned $9,000. And so you think back to tonight's session, you're like, I can remember her saying that if it's under $9,350, then I don't have to pay any tax. So I'm just not going to file my return. I'm just going to let it go. If you look at your W-2, and it shows in that box, too, that you had $500 of withholding, that's $500 you're letting the IRS keep. Because none of it should have been taxable, which means that you can get all of your withholding back. So the good thing about filing your tax return is that there are ways to get money back because the IRS may have taken too much. And if they've taken too much, if you don't want it, then I'll file your tax return and I'll take the money because I'll certainly do it. But it's good to have that. You file your return. If you've got a refund, then that's additional money for you to pay for school, to go out at night, to do something fun with.
So if I made like $3,000 in a year, that's why I didn't do it, because my parents told me that it wasn't going to be worth it to actually pay to get the return. So is that bad?
Under your circumstances, you still needed to file a return because you weren't an employee. Because you weren't getting a pay, you didn't have the FICA and Social Security coming out of your checks.
I did.
Oh, no, then you were fine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
The question that was asked was, last year she received a W-2 for $3,000 and her parents told her that she didn't need to file a return. And you don't have to file at that point. If you had withholding on there, I would still file it to get it back, because there's no reason for them to keep it, because you can file your own return. If all that's on there is a $3,000 W-2, just a one-page 1040 EZ, and you send it off and you get a check back in the mail. Yes, ma'am. For me to do your return, yes. For you to do your return, no.
Oh, also, for the W-4,
you can put any number you want on there. The W-4 and the numbers that you put on there are actually designed based on, because it will look at your income. Let's say if it's you get $100 this week, and you've put a 1 on there, it will actually look at, based on you getting $100 for every week of the year, you would earn X amount, and that would mean that you're subject to this amount of tax, and so they would only withhold that percentage of it. So it's actually it's a good system for determining what the appropriate amount is. If you know you're going to be underneath that, then you can put any number you want on there. You might feel more confident putting a higher number on there. But it's just recognizing that if you do take another job where you get more, end up making more towards the end of the year, then you might end up being subject to tax where you didn't have any withheld in January. If you put the right note, it's based on what you put on that W-4.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? My question to you, do you have to pay tax on scholarships? Anyone receive scholarships? You? Do you have to pay tax on it? It's a great question. Knees could start shaking. What if I say yes? Everyone's going to bolt. Do you have to pay tax on your scholarships? Sometimes. Yes and no. If you get a scholarship and you use your scholarship for qualified education expenses, you don't have to pay tax on it. Let's say your tuition for 2009, tuition and fees, what's in it? How much is that? Jimmy, how much is tuition and fees here?
I think Paul said something like
For once, so let's say you take summer sessions, $10,000 a year. All right, just a nice easy number for my math in my head. So tuition this year is going to be $10,000 a year. We're a full-time student, or maybe we're a grad student. Things get a bit more expensive. Let's say you get a scholarship for $15,000. If you have $15,000 of scholarship, you spend $10,000 on your qualified tuition and expenses. But then you take the other $5,000 and maybe you pay your rent, you pay your car insurance, you go buy a new car, you go on a trip. That $5,000 is taxable income to you. And the IRS will tax that on your tax return because it wasn't spent on qualified education expenses. Flip side of that, if your tuition's $10,000 and you get $8,000 in reimbursements, then none of that's going to be taxable. So it's everything that's spent on qualified education expenses that's considered tax-free. Anything in excess of that is taxable to get by the IRS. Yes, ma'am?
What if you save that remaining $5,000 for the next year's tuition?
I would ask the scholarship payer to pay it to you the next year. The question was, well, what if you save the $5,000 and decide to use it the next year? And my suggestion would be to ask whoever you are receiving the scholarship from to hold it for you until the next year and to pay it to you then. And I've had those circumstances at North Texas where we've done that, where we'll pay it out over years so that the student doesn't get hit with something like that. Yes, ma'am.
What about those people that get refunds
from the Pell Grants? No. Yep. The question was asking for the Pell Grants and the educational assistance that comes from the government. Because that's generally already based on how much your tuition's going to be, and that's already taken into their formula, there's no obligation there on that side. Other questions? Two different credits for education, the lifetime learning and the HOPE credit. The HOPE credit you can take for the first 2 years while you're in school, so the first, what is it, the first 30 or 60 hours, something like that. The lifetime learning credit you can take for as long as you continue going to school. Both of them are going to be limited based on your AGI, so that adjusted gross income number. So if you start making too much money, then your credits get phased out. And you'll find that a lot of the tax laws like that, with any of the deductions that you can take, the more money you make, the less benefit that you're going to get from them. Form 8863 is one to know if you're going to be taking those on your tax return. So a good one to know because that can help you with your taxes. If you've got children, if you're a full-time, if you work full-time, if you've got kids that are in daycare, Form 2441 allows you to take a credit for the daycare expenses that you're paying. Again, so we're getting that number, that tax liability, down as low as we can. And then the child tax credit, depending on your income level, you can get $1,000 per child to take as an additional credit on your tax return. Yeah. I'm sorry, say it again, I can't hear you.
I have a friend that's in the last year. She came to fund her in what do I do? Because she's a resident. She doesn't think she's a resident. But, like, her parents pay taxes and everything, and she's an independent owner, so she has a child.
Mm-hmm.
So, when, like, she's looking for her child,
If she claims her, the question was asking, she has a friend whose parents still claim her, but then her friend has a child. If she claims her child on her tax return, then she would still be eligible to get.
Even though she's not full-time, she's part-time.
She has to be employed. She has to work. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Correct. Yep. And generally, I know this might seem unfair, but a lot of times what you find is that you're subject to, let's say you're in a you underneath that $16,000 threshold, so you might make 10%. The highest tax rate you're going to pay is 10% a year. So if you get a $4,000 deduction, it only decreases your tax by $400, $4,000 at your 10% tax rate. But if your parents are in a much higher tax rate, let's say that they're in a 30% tax rate, then that can decrease their tax by $1,200. So the higher the tax rate, it's a better answer for them generally than it's going to be for you.
But I thought it was the same amount of
Not for the child tax credit. That's just the child tax credit is different than who claims you. The claiming comes into with the personal exemption, the $3,700 a year. It's whether you get to take it or whether your parents get to take it. And it's generally a better answer if they take it. Yeah. Not unless you've paid anything in. If you've paid something in and you don't owe any tax, then you'll get it back. But if you haven't paid anything in, then you're not going to get anything back. When is your tax return due? Does anyone know? April 15th. April 15th, you can file your return, or you can request an extension to file the return through October 15th. The keyword is to file your return. Any payments that are due, all of your taxes are still due by April 15th. If you don't file your taxes by April 15th, then they'll hit you with late payment interest and late payment penalties on the amount due. So how do we lower our income taxes? You've graduated, you're off in the world, you're making that $100,000, that six, seven-figure salary, we can all hope. Fingers crossed for all of us that we could all get the seven-figure salary. But how do you get your liability as low as possible? Because there's no reason to pay Uncle Sam any more than necessary. You might as well keep as much as for yourself as possible. Use your employer's retirement plans. The 401k plans, if you go into teaching, the 403bs. If you're self-employed, there are different self-employed plans that you can use that allow you to put money away that the government never gets to touch. So let's say if you put $15,000 into your 401k and you're in a 30% tax bracket, you've saved yourself $4,500 in taxes just by putting money into a savings account. Yes, ma'am. Only, but you can't take it out. As long as it stays in there, it's fine. When you are in retirement, so when you're 60 years old and you pull that out, it's taxed at that point. But it's not taxed right now. So when you're earning the money, you don't have to pay tax on it. While it's sitting in your savings account earning more money, you don't have to pay tax on any of those earnings. So it's just when you're in retirement and you pull something out that you pay tax on it at that point. The mindset a lot of times is that right now you're making $1 million, you're in the really, really high tax bracket, and when you retire, you're only pulling out as much as you need. You don't have $1 million anymore. You're not making that every year. So now we're down in the 10% tax bracket. So when you pull money out at that point, you've saved yourself 25% in tax. Yep. In retirement, you're going to be in a high tax bracket? I want to know what job you're going to get. If that's the way it works. No, that's just generally speaking. Most people, the first few years out of school, you might not make a whole lot. But then at the prime of your career, you would hope that you are. And then in retirement, you would expect your income to drop. But I'll get to why you want to do the 401k earlier. Earlier versus later. I've got that up here, too. Yes, ma'am. Yep. Right. Yeah. So in retirement, you wouldn't have a job, but you've got these 401k contributions that you've made for the last 20 years, because that's what you're going to live on in retirement. So maybe you pull $20,000 out of your 401k, and you're only taxed on that $20,000. So you would be in a much lower tax bracket then. When you switch jobs, what you'll find is that any employer or any full-time employer should generally have the benefits like a 401k plan to offer to you. But you might switch. I think people now graduating, now they say that they switch employers or switch jobs some 6 to 10 times. So every time you leave an employer, you can take your 401k plan and do what's called a rollover and roll it over either into your next employer's 401k plan, or you can roll it over into what's called an individual retirement account or an IRA. Tax-free transaction just moves it straight into another savings account. Mm-hmm. You tell them how much you want them to take out. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. It'll still be there for you? Because generally when you have a 401k, it's not the company that administers it. So when I worked for Deloitte, Deloitte used Vanguard Investments. And I could tell Vanguard, this is what I want. This is where I want you to invest my money. I want you to put it in a savings account. I want you to buy technology stocks. I want you to buy international stocks. I want you to buy bonds with it. So when I left Deloitte, Vanguard still held my 401k. All that money that I contributed was still sitting with Vanguard. And I could have left it there, and then at 60, I would hopefully still remember where it was and come and ask for some payments out of it. Or, versus having them scattered all over the place, I rolled mine out of the Vanguard and into where my new employer has their retirement plans, which is with Fidelity now. Yes, ma'am.
So, they have it in a certain savings account, or a certain interest, and the next employer has a higher interest, you would want to roll over.
Yeah. So, maximizing your employer's 401k plan. Right now, again, this adjusts every year. Right now, you can put about $15,000 a year into your 401k plan. And you might, as a first year out of school, $15,000 might sound like an awful lot to put into savings. My suggestion is to start with something smaller. Start with $50 a paycheck. $50 every 2 weeks, that's a dinner out. So you could forego one night out and put $50 a paycheck in. After the first year, you might say, well, that wasn't too bad. I got a raise this year. I'm just, the $100 extra my raise was going to give me, I'm going to increase it to now into my 401k. I'm going to put $150 a paycheck because I'm already living off of what I already had. So you can put the money there where you're not even seeing it, so it's not the huge chunk of having $15,000 come out at a time. And we'll talk briefly about why it's important to start early versus later. IRA contributions, I mentioned the individual retirement accounts. You can put about $5,000 a year into IRAs. Save yourself whatever your tax bracket is, putting into a traditional IRA. Roth IRAs is just another retirement account that you can put money into and get tax benefits off of it. Yes, ma'am. Any bank can do it. Mm-hmm. Janus, Fidelity, Vanguard, Merrill Lynch. Mm-mm. Not without penalties. The question was whether you can touch the money once it's in there. When you put money into IRAs or 401ks, it has to stay in those accounts until you're 59 and a half, otherwise it's going to be subject to penalties and possibly income tax, depending on where it comes from. The exception to that is that there are very specific exclusions where you can take money out and not pay the tax, or not pay the penalty, excuse me. First-time home buyers is a big one. You don't have to pay the penalty if you're buying your first house. If you die, they let you take the money out and won't subject you to the penalty, and some other items, but they're very specific. Review your W-4. Make sure when you give it to your employer that you're having enough withholding come out so you don't get stuck with the late payment penalties or interest when you file your tax return. Give donations to charities, especially in the state of Texas. If you move to any other state where you've got an income tax, your income taxes, the state income taxes, you can take as a deduction on your federal return. But if you live in Texas, if you buy a house, give to your local charities because that's a deduction that you can take on your tax return. Your mortgage interest, your property taxes, your charity deductions, your church. If you give clothes to the Goodwill, you get to take that as a deduction. The one thing to note here is that very bottom line. Every single year, the average taxpayer overpays their taxes by $400 a year. That might mean that they calculated the return wrong, or it might mean that they decided, well, you know, I only made $4,000 this year, so there's no reason for me to file. But if you have that withholding on your W-2, then you're letting Uncle Sam keep your money when he doesn't even deserve it. 4 different ways you can prepare your tax return. Manually, you can go to the post office. They keep the forms there every year. A couple different organizations in Denton County will actually do free tax assistance. I think it's through, was it through the Salvation Army or through United Way? Yeah. There will be places set up around town where you can go and ask questions of someone that knows, has done their taxes for years, or maybe is a retired accountant. and ask them specific questions on your tax return. You can buy TurboTax, which is just a software program. You install it on your computer. It asks you a bunch of questions and then prepares your tax return for you. Off the IRS website, there are links to free tax preparation and electronic filing. So you can prepare your own return. Again, it's going to ask you some questions. It fills out the forms for you. And then you can submit it electronically. You can even put your banking information in there. So the refund will come straight into your checking account. And the bottom method is to come and see me. If you start making enough money, if you open your own business, if you buy the house, if you've got lots of charities, if you have lots of medical expenses, if your circumstances get more complex, find a local CPA firm. There are lots of firms, local practices that you can use in any town that you might go to. You obviously see the H&R Blocks that are also available. I will say from my experience, H&R Block frequently actually charges more than your local accounting firm is going to do. Because I see clients that come in and they're being charged much more, new clients that have been charged much more for an H&R Block than not to knock it too bad. I won't tell my horn. What to save? How much do you need to save? So of your record keeping, what I would suggest, you know those accordion files where they've got lots of slots in them? You can get one of those, use one slot per year, and just keep your financial records in there. Or you can get a file cabinet. If you're very technologically savvy, scan it all in and put it on an external hard drive. The things you need to keep, always keep your tax returns. 15 years from now, you should still have your tax return. You may not have anything else that supports it, but you should still have your tax return. The IRS can go back and audit the last 3 years at any moment. Any of you, the IRS could walk in and say, I want to see the last 3 years of your tax returns and not have any reason to do it. They can go back 7 years, but they have to prove, before they can go back that far, they have to be able to say that you have materially misstated your tax return. There's a substantial understatement of income on your return. If they think you've committed fraud, they can go back as far as they want to go. I did have a client recently. This little old lady called. And, you know, you could just tell that she was tiny and frail and I don't know how old she could have been. And she was asking me about how long to keep her tax returns. And I said, oh, your tax returns you should keep forever. And she goes, really? She goes, I've got closets full. And I'm like, well, all the paperwork, you can get rid of that. She goes, but I've just got closets. I said, well, tell me, what year are you holding in front of you? And she goes, 1958. I'm like, okay, we could probably get rid of those. At this point, looking, you know, 50 years later, little old Biddy probably doesn't need to keep her 50-year-old tax return. But generally, those types of things you're going to want to keep. Your bank statements, your credit card statements. A lot of times, once you start itemizing, you'll get emails that from a friend that says, hey, I'm doing the breast cancer walk. You want to sponsor me? So you go online, you put in your credit card information, and you give her a $30 donation to the breast cancer. Well, if you're not keeping that credit card statement, at the end of the year, you're not going to remember that you gave that $30 deduction so that you can then take it as a deduction on your tax return. So keep those statements, keep them all in one place, and at the end of the year, you've got everything together. How to get yourself to financial security. We're in the home stretch now, a few slides left. Set up a budget. No one likes a budget. I don't like a budget. What's important about a budget is that it gives you a realistic idea of how much money you can spend. If you make $50,000 a year and you do your budget and you're living in an apartment that costs you $35,000 a year, your budget needs some serious work. You either need a new job or a new apartment. But if you don't take the time to look at your income and your expenses and to be realistic about what you spend your money on, then you're never going to get to financial security of having any savings for a rainy day. Very last three words on that slide are a favorite word of accountants, of investment people, of financial advisors: pay yourself first. What that means is that when you get your paycheck, take the money, because you're looking at your budget so you know how much you want to save. Put aside, if it's $20, if it's $100, take that $20 and put it in your savings account. Pay yourself After that, then go get your nails done and go buy the new golf club and go to the movies. But pay yourself and pay your savings and pay your future before you do the other things. And why do you want to do this? Why do you want to put money into your 401k right after you graduate? Why do you want to put money into your IRA? And it's all about compounded interest. So if you're 22 and you graduate this year, and we're going to max out our 401k contributions, I've calculated interest at 5%, so pretty very conservative growth. So at the end of year one, you've got the $16,000 that you contributed, you've got $800 of interest, so you've only got $17,000, and there's not a lot. But we're going to do this every single year until we're 56, until we retire. By the time you retire, 56, if you put in the $16,000, earning 5% a year, you will retire with $1.5 million in the bank to live on after retirement. So setting up your contributions to your 401k, doing it earlier, because if you don't start until you're 40, then you're never going to have enough saved up in there by the time you get to 56. So the sooner you can start, even if you're just starting out with the $50 a paycheck, and you're doing that every week or every 2 weeks, and putting that into your 401k and building it up over time, that dollar that you put in at 22 is going to earn money, and then that next year it's going to earn money on money, and then money on money on money, and you can see how it just builds and accumulates over time. And it's one of the few things that, from a financial standpoint, you cannot undo this mistake, because you can't get more time out of it. If you don't start this early and you wait until you're 40 or 50, then you've lost the chance to start it sooner versus later. Any questions on that? Yes, sir. I'm sorry, say that again. Yeah. So at the end of the first year, you've got $17,000. The beginning of the next year, your interest goes up to $1,700 a year. And this is just at 5%. I mean, we've obviously, over the last 18 months, we've lost the money out of this. But then over the course of the last, the last 80 years, the average growth rate is around 7.5%. So 5% is pretty conservative on what you'd expect. We've had some years that were 25, but then if you look at my retirement for 1 year for the last 18 months, and it's down about 30%. Well, now it's better, but it was at one point. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
This isn't all in your regular savings.
No. The concept still works for your regular savings, but the $16,500, that was for your 401k.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Not for taking it out. It's just all that. The question was, if you've got a savings account and it's earning money while you've got it, and then you take all the money out of the savings account, are you taxed when you take it out? You're not taxed because you've taken it out. You're taxed on the earnings every single year. So if you put $500 into a savings account and you earn $50 that year in interest, you're taxed on the $50. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question that is not related to my taxes. Mm-hmm. Actually, it goes back to who files the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, you said, say that you worked in 2008, in fall of 2008, and you decided to move from the United States to foreign country,
mm-hmm,
in the spring of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So, would you still have to file your taxes even though you moved to a different?
If you're a U.S., are you a U.S. citizen?
Yes.
Or a U.S. resident?
Yes.
U.S. citizens have to file a tax return regardless of what country they live in, where they're working, where their money is, where they get paid from.
Okay.
They have to file.
Now, let's say that you worked 1 year in the United States and then you transferred
it
the following year.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to pay anything.
If you're not working, no.
Okay.
No. Other questions? Last slide. So my tips for you: set up a budget and a savings plan. Get an idea of how much you can, even if it's that small $50 a paycheck, if it's $20 a paycheck, be diligent, because if you start it now, $20 is easy, and then you can bump it up a little bit, and then you can bump it up a little more, to where it doesn't take quite the bite out of your paycheck. Polish your cooking skills. That means once you start working after graduation, it's very easy and very expensive to do takeout. As a young professional, you will work long hours, you'll work hard. You might have a family at home, you might have a spouse at home. And when your lunch break comes, it's very easy to jump in the car, run down to Whataburger, spend $10, and come back. You get off work, you jump in the car, driving home, you stop at Payway, you pay $15, get some to go, and go home and eat. Maybe you get Starbucks on the way to work if you do my commute. I mean, that's $30 a day in food. Whereas if you go to the grocery store, buy yourself a box of Pop-Tarts, take a sandwich, heat up a pizza at home, it might cost you $10 a day. So $20 a day, 5 days a week, it's $100 a week. I mean, they're talking about $5,000 a year just in eating out, and not even really good food to eat out. I mean, it's just for convenience food. So polish up your cooking skills. Keep your debt under control. Watch your credit card, credit card spending. Pay off your balance, or pay it off monthly. Don't let it build up. Watch the other debt that you take on. Remember your retirement, so max out those 401k plans. And finally, if you have questions, if you don't understand something, then seek out someone that does. If you're ill, if you have a fever, if you're sick, you go to the doctor and you ask for a prescription to get better. If your financial circumstances are ill, if they're bad, then seek someone out that understands it, that can help you get on the right track. A lot of financial advisors are very inexpensive for consulting. A lot of CPAs are not that expensive to help you, and they can give you a wealth of information. Thank y'all for having me, and if there aren't any further questions, that's it.